Welcome to Methods, a podcast from the ESRC National Centre for Research Methods. In today's episode, we discuss the benefits and challenges of multi-sited ethnography. Our guest is the anthropologist, Dr. Pauline von Hellermann from Goldsmiths University of London, and she starts by explaining the background to the concept.
So ethnography, the word derives from a combination of the Greek word for ethnos, people, and graph, or graphic writing. So it's about writing about people, and it's basically traditionally always been a qualitative method, which is based on long-term, in-depth research in just one place, where you really seek to understand a community and its practices and beliefs holistically, both how an insider sees it as an outsider. Multi-sided ethnography, in principle, is still based in this sort of understanding of ethnography, so still trying to understand things in depth and through qualitative methods like participant observation and interviews. But instead of focusing on just one site, it is basically research that is conducted in several or multiple sites.
So in terms of how many sites, how often they're visited, is it very prescriptive or is it very open?
How many sites there are, and how far apart they are, and how much time is spent in each of these is quite open and can really vary. And that really just depends on the research topic and the questions asked. And this was mapped out really nicely by George Marcus in this sort of very seminal key article that everyone who does multi-sited research always refers to, the In and Out of the World System article published in 1995. And here he discusses how a researcher might follow different objects, for example, a people, a thing, an institution, a policy, or a conflict, or a story. So for all these things, if you are, for example, following a people, such as a particular group of migrants, then you might conduct research in one place, maybe, for example, the place they come from, and then the place they have migrated to. But if you're following a thing, for example, my colleague Emma Tarlo did research on the global hair trade, where she really followed where hair came from and where it was used and wigs were made. And that took her to all sorts of different places all over the world, and some of which she visited for a longer time and some really just very shortly. Or if you're following an idea, such as austerity, for example, or a policy, policies around austerity, you might, again, conduct very different kinds of research. You might visit and speak to politicians or do online research or spend some time in councils or government departments or be in an affected community. So all these different kinds of things can be so varied that there really isn't one kind of multi-sited ethnography as such.
So you've hinted there at a couple of types of research that might sort of benefit from this approach. So I wonder, as a method, does it lend itself to particular types of research question, would you say?
I suppose in a fundamental way, yes, in the sense that we've really, as a discipline, anthropology has really moved away from what it used to do classically, which was about studying one community in one place and really try and understand it holistically. We've really moved away from this kind of approach, and in fact, multi-sited research as a method has really been part of this moving away. So nowadays, we really, just because of a growing recognition of the sort of political, economic networks and histories that all people all over the world are really part of, and also because of a sort of, I suppose, the crisis of representation in anthropology that we're now realizing, you can never really claim to understand everything about one people and sort of write a whole story. So for both of these reasons, we do not sort of ever claim to say we will write about the Nuer or the Edo people or something, but that we really just try and do partial stories, sort of more focused questions, and also questions that really are sort of completely embedded in recognizing global networks, connections, and those sort of things. So in that sense, yes. On the other hand, I suppose no, simply because that's still a huge field and there's still so many topics within that.
So much of your research, Pauline, is focused on the landscapes and politics of Africa. So I wonder how you've managed to employ this method to good effect to research this area.
So I'd quite like to talk maybe about two projects, one I've done in the past and one I'm hopefully planning to do. The past one was on forest policy in Nigeria, which in a sense was not sort of on the face of it multi-sited, because I was mainly based in one area in southern Nigeria. But actually in practice, and this is sort of something that is sort of developed quite a lot in anthropology now anyway, that even projects that are sort of nominally in one site are actually in practice multi-sited. I was based in this sort of forest reserve in Edo State, but I also visited lots of different government officials in Benin City, in Lagos, and in the UK, and visited lots of different archives and used different kinds of documents. And also within Edo State itself, I had two main villages where I was based, one, a small village and a small town, and also visited lots of different ones. So in that sense, that was multi-sited as well. And that really helped to really uncover and think about how both policies are produced and reproduced and manifested in practices, but also how then on the ground, often the actual practices can be very, very different. So that was very important to do both, to always look at the overall framework and the actual practices on the ground. But you couldn't really have done one without the other.
And what about your future plans?
This would be a project about palm oil, which is really sort of multi-sited ethnography, sort of par excellence, if you like, where I'm hoping to look at really palm oil for sort of from all sorts of angles, as a sort of the traditional kinds of ways of using it, and the oil palm and the beliefs around it, but then also global agribusinesses today and the sort of vast networks they span, going from plantation over the global transporting to the ways they are marketed and sold and used in different places, or in the UK here and in different places. And then also looking at protest movements and those sort of things. So that is all, that kind of research really would be, or if I do it, really multi-sited, in that I'll be going to Nigeria, Indonesia, India and the UK and lots of different places within those.
So I wonder if you can tell us some of the key things that you would say have sort of emerged from your work that you've done already, and maybe from other work as well, and you know, in terms of this method being very effective.
When we set up our workshop on multi-sited ethnography in 2005, what was sort of talked about a lot is this sort of wordplay between multi-sited as in site, as in S-I-T-E, versus multi-sited, S-I-G-H-T-E-D. Going to different sites really allows you to look at the same thing from different angles, and also just kind of getting different voices and different viewpoints across, and really understanding things holistically in that way. So I think that is the sort of a key insight that you can get. And that certainly helped a lot with my Nigeria research. And then also with palm oil, of course, you couldn't get this sort of holistic understanding that I'm hoping to get by just going to one site, because it's really about the sort of the global nature of it, and that all the different things that have been connected and that are happening in different places in the world at the same time, that you cannot get those really doing research in one site alone.
Understood. So lots of potential benefits, but I imagine also some fairly serious challenges and difficulties associated with an approach like this. And also, does it have limitations?
The key worry is always that you lose the sort of key characteristics or the real strength of ethnography, which is to have in-depth sort of long-term insights into one particular area. And so one tangible aspect of this is language, that traditionally anthropologists would have maybe spent, if you spend 1 or 2 years in a place, then you really learn the local language, and you really gain in that way lots of insights that you just miss when you don't learn local languages. And I suppose then one sort of way of expressing is the sort of worry of losing the subaltern, or the sort of voices that are not normally heard by, if you just do everything in one language, very often English, then you just kind of, there's a certain danger of only listening to and reproducing the knowledge and sort of discourses of people who are in power. And then sort of that's sort of a worry in terms of what you're writing and what you're producing. And then, but the overall worry is just simply the thinness, that what you're producing will not be very good, that you're just going for a very short time to each place. You will never really understand the sort of underneath sort of relationships and sort of hidden contours of how people relate to each other. Another aspect of this are the sheer logistics and costs of how to organize it all. That can also be quite challenging. Doing multi-sited research in itself doesn't mean you necessarily have to lose depth, and sometimes it can actually really facilitate to gain depth. So that's not just the kind of different angles and sites that I was talking about earlier, but also, for example, if it's research about a migrant group, then really your understanding is deeper and more meaningful if you live with them both in, let's say, in Italy and Senegal, rather than just one of those places.
So then, Pauline, for anyone who might be thinking of using this approach, using this method in their research, a little bit anxious about those challenges, what would you say to them?
First of all, just really sort of be aware of the kind of institutional and sort of financial limits that you might that you're operating in. So, I mean, particularly for PhD students, that ultimately they're still getting a PhD in one discipline and they will have two examiners. So you need to sort of make sure that your project is still more or less within the realms of the discipline you're operating in and that the examiners will be sympathetic to your approach and that indeed you will have enough time and money to do the research you're planning. So those are sort of real constraints to consider. And also for, maybe this speaks a little bit more to anthropologists in particular, what I suppose the way anthropology is normally, if you like, if you're conceived, is that you might have a question and you choose a research area and then you go to this place and then you spend 1 year there and then very, very often you actually end up doing something slightly different to what you had initially planned to do just because other things emerge to be much more important or more interesting and more doable as a project. And that kind of open-endedness, this sort of responsiveness to the research site itself is much more difficult, of course, if your initial idea was to go 2 months there, 2 months there, 2 months there, 2 months there, because you don't have that time to just sort of explore around and find out other things.
I imagine you need to be a whole lot more organized as well in terms of your research planning.
You need to think much more clearly in advance about the relationship between your question and your methods. Having said that, and this is something that George Marcus keeps on sort of talking about, is that ideally multi-sided research can also be open-ended, that you might start in one area, but it can still take you then in different areas. I would certainly never advise anyone to do multi-sited research simply for the sake of it, just because you think this is what people do now. There is still a lot to be gained from being in one research sites and sort of that sort of long-term immersion. Having said that, of course, simply so many questions nowadays do mean that you have to go to lots of different places. So it's something that has just become more necessary, but you don't have to do it for the sake of it, but it's just something that you need to think through a little bit more.
I wonder if you have an example of where this method's been used to really good effect and effected a change or had impact in some way that you're aware of.
Just one example would be my colleague Dinah Rajak at Sussex University, who's been working on corporate social responsibility, where she worked on a sort of Anglo-American mining company based with headquarters in London and then also mines in South Africa. And she really visited and did research in all these different sites. And that research really showed how both these sort of discourses of corporate social responsibility are produced and used very effectively. And yet what they actually then mean in situ is often quite different, or it's actually often about really reinforcing existing power structures. And her research is read really widely in business circles, business studies, so in anthropology as well, of course, but it's really had a lot of impact. And just to think critically and in different ways about corporate social responsibility as a discourse.
Pauline von Hilleman was talking to Christine Garrington about the benefits and challenges of multi-sited ethnography as a research method. More information about Pauline's work is available on the Goldsmith website, and you can listen to more episodes of our Methods podcast on the NCRM website at www.ncrm.ac.uk.